near Lake Michigan. Current stats, we have sunny blue sky, wind northwest at 8, 39 degrees Kenosha, 37 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. There's a big event happening later this afternoon and into the evening, starting at 5:30 p.m. at Washington Park High School. And it is Bigger Than Basketball 2025. And it's a wonderful, exciting, and important event. And at the helm of it, helping to help organize this, is Nikita Hamer, who is Racine County Violent Crime Reduction Coordinator and the state lead for an organization called Voices of Black Mothers United, a group that works hard on, in terms of advocacy, family and community intervention, and promoting positive policing. And towards that end, this Bigger Than Basketball event at Park High School is meant to bring the community together and to help highlight the need to make our community safer for everybody. And Nikita Hamer comes to this important work from a very, very personal place, at least in part from a painful loss. She herself has suffered a painful loss echoed in families all across the country. And it is great to see such commendable work being done by her and others. And I'm really grateful to Nikita Hamer for making time in her busy schedule to join me for a few minutes to talk not only about tonight's work, but also about her ongoing work to try to reduce crime in Racine. Nikita Hamer, we welcome you to the morning show.
Good morning, and thank you.
I'm so glad that we can have this conversation with you. You have been working in this area for some years now, and I know that part of the reason why you work with such passion is because of a really painful loss that you personally suffered a few years ago. I wonder if you would mind us talking first about the story of your brother, D'Anthony, and what happened to him, and in the wake of that, what you have been so busy doing ever since.
Yes. So my brother, D'Anthony Keenan, was killed and dismembered in Muskegon, Michigan in August of 2017. And for my family, myself, my mother, his children, and my community, that was a very hard blow. That was a very hard pill to swallow. And it changed our life forever. And so I didn't, you know, to be so broken and in such a dark place and see it in so many people, I had no idea what I could do to fix it or to take it away. But I did have hope that one day God was going to use that pain and that I was going to come out and I was going to be better and I was going to make people around me better. And to this day, it's, in August, it'll be 8 years. But my family, we still grieve, we still hurt, we still miss him. But over the last, I'll say 3 to 4 years, I have made a lot of impact in my community where I'm able to smile again. You know, we're able to bring that light not only into my own family, but I'm able to carry it into other families as they are unfortunately impacted in this same way. Just being able to share my story and show them that I know how you feel. I was in that dark place, but I made it. I'm here. I survived that. And I take honor in being able to be that light in so many other families and moms as they experience this tragedy.
I know that you were named Racine County Violent Crime Reduction Coordinator in 2022, but ahead of that, you were active in the community in a couple of other different ways. Explain when you came to Racine and the kind of work that you have done before becoming Racine County Violent Crime Reduction Coordinator.
So since my brother's death in 2017, there was just things in my heart. There was just a willingness to serve. So I was doing things on a volunteer basis as far as giveaways, my first remembrance brunch that happened in 2021 before my official role. And that brunch actually came, it was in honor of my brother because his birthday is the day after Christmas. And for the first couple years, that was really a hard time because it wasn't happy, it wasn't merry, we didn't have joy. But I remember seeing a vision of a breakfast, and I was serving people. And so before I officially had the funds, the role, or the title, I was really destined to make that happen, not just to give myself something to do, to be busy and not grieve during that holiday season, but I just started to see so many more people around me being impacted in that same way. And I realized it wasn't just because of his birthday or the holiday season, but losing a loved one violently hurts, and there it causes this deep void within your family. And it really matters when community and people show up and help give you back that joy and give you that peace, give you a song in your heart. So those things, I believe that, you know, that was a purpose that God had for me in this pain. And I'm really fortunate and blessed that I connected with the Wilson Center in Racine County when I did, and I've had the support to go on and do 4 or 5 remembrance brunches, several events, backpack giveaways, awareness rallies. It's really limitless, honestly, and just the things that we can do when we come together. And I'm just honored that my community stands with me as well.
Hmm. So describe what are kind of the your primary areas of focus as Racine County Violent Crime Reduction Coordinator. And when it comes to that interesting word of coordinator, what or the efforts of whom are you coordinating in this position?
So my work primarily focuses around working with police, promoting positive policing. So a lot of the events that I do, including this basketball game where we have police officers on our roster, we do events in the school where we ask the police to stand with us. We do things in the community, spreading awareness, and we also ask the police to stand with us. Because the number one thing as we move towards safety is understanding that it does include law enforcement. We can't move towards a safer community without acknowledging law enforcement and the role that they play in keeping us safe. There's been a lot of interventions that we do along with police where there may be young people or people in general who are identified as either perpetrators of violence or being a target of violence. And we do interventions where we go into those homes and we say, hey, we know what's going on out there. It doesn't look good. But if you would like to help, we do have services. We do have resources. At the county, we focus primarily on juvenile offenders. So I'm able to give those conversations and step into a big sister role in that family and a mentor and talk to them about not just what I lost, but how I can help them make changes so that their family don't lose. It wasn't fun planning a funeral. It wasn't fun, you know, seeing the hurt in my mom's eyes. So when I can be real and transparent with that young person who may not be able to see past their decisions right now, but show him how, him or her, how their consequences and their actions, they will carry on, you know, and they will, even if it's loss of life, it impacts so many more people. So being able to have that real conversation and say, this is not what I want for you. I know you don't want it for yourself. It may be hard to make different decisions, but we're here. And 99% of the time, the young people and the families do take that help. They do receive those services, and they do start making strides towards being better. And if it's just one life that we're impacting each time, that's enough for us. But it does create a ripple effect in our community and how we see change and how we see law enforcement and also how we see violence as not being the answer to the things that we go through and the things we face.
Hmm. We're speaking with Nikita Hamer in this portion of the morning show. She is Racine County Violent Crime Reduction Coordinator, and she is also state lead for an organization called Voices of Black Mothers United. Tell us more about that group, Voices of Black Mothers United, and the kind of work that they have done both here and in all other parts of the country.
So Voices of Black Mothers United is a product of the Wilson Center in D.C. It was founded by Ms. Sylvia Benison, who lost her daughter to senseless violence. And we are in about 12 different states. Each mom brings their own unique experience with grief, loss, and overcoming it, most importantly. I myself am not a parent that lost a child. You know, my loss was my brother. And in Racine area, I focus on making sure we extend that advocacy beyond the parents to include the whole family, those cousins, those siblings, those close friends, and recognizing that everybody hurts and grieves, and we all can have a place in healing and moving forward and remembering our loved one in a positive way. We do a National Day of Concern in October where we go into our schools all over and we talk to our young people about their choices, and we ask them to take a pledge and personal commitment to themselves that they will never use a firearm to handle a dispute, never bring that firearm to school. And then we also talk to them about healthy ways to resolve their conflict and how they can bring these issues to adults and solve them in a way that does not result in anyone losing their life. Throughout the year, different moms do different retreats. We all have different groups locally that we support, as far as bereaved families, mothers, children. And it's just really beautiful to see the different purpose that each mom has began to walk in, the different healing that has taken place, and the way that they each individually impact their communities. And some of the things that they may be doing in other areas that I can see that work here in Racine, or vice versa, they may see something that's working in Racine that they want to bring to their area. And it truly is just an honor and privilege to be a part of the unity nationally, to recognize all of those who have lost their lives and have been impacted all over the world, not just our communities.
Right. And I suppose this is, it's similar to other kinds of trauma and hurts that people suffer from, but it can make all the difference in the world when you are receiving comfort and encouragement from somebody who has been in the same place and who has experienced the same kind of, for instance, tragic loss. It would be a whole entirely different thing if it's somebody for whom that's not a part of their life, not a part of their own reality. But you and others can really speak from a deeply personal experience about what it means to rise above this kind of tragedy and to try to find some sort of positive, healthy step forward instead of being consumed by that grief and anger.
Yes.
Tell us more about the matter of promoting positive policing. There is a lot wrapped up in those three simple words, and I think a lot of people listening can well understand the work that needs to be done. What is your understanding of the sort of the deepest purpose of promoting positive policing and how that can be best achieved?
To me, that means, first of all, seeing law enforcement as people first. We all have jobs that we do, titles that we hold, careers that we may have chosen. Being a police officer, law enforcement officer, is exactly that. Because when they're not on the clock, when they're not in the squad, when they're not in uniform, they are people. They are humans. They are moms. They are siblings. They are fathers, brothers. So I think that's the most important thing, is that some of these things are taught as well because of our traumas and experiences, maybe even growing up, or just things culturally that we have been taught about, like not talking to police, or that police are out to get us, or that we're targets because of the color of our skin. But I think if we take a step back and look at each officer for themselves and as an individual, and that they are doing a job, and if we focus on also doing our job as communities by following the rules, not breaking laws, then we find ourselves having less contacts with these people. And it doesn't have to be confrontational. You can have a conversation with the officer, even in their squad, Even if there is some suspicion of something, but just using our words to communicate effectively, using respect both ways, approaching the situation and seeing them as individuals who are doing the job that they have signed up to do. But then it also allows police to come into our spaces and be welcome in that space, to be welcome on the court as a teammate. So this is why intentionally in the Bigger Than Basketball game, we don't have a officer team versus a community team. We mix those officers right in with the community members and the kids because we want them to see them as, you can be on my team, you can be on my side, we can wear the same color, we can accomplish the same goal. And I think that's very important because, again, when we look at crime or being impacted or things being unsafe, that is the police's job. That is who we call. That is what we expect them to show up and to do. So when there isn't anything happening and there isn't a situation, I think there's still opportunity for us to embrace those officers in the same way, whether it's through basketball, just a conversation, or maybe you just need help. Maybe you just need answers. And I do know a lot of great officers here in the city of Racine and the different municipalities that we work with that are awesome people first. They're often humans. They are here to help. They go out of their way. I see it all of the time. And I'm very grateful for opportunities to bring the community together where we're not talking about what we don't like about police, but we're seeing what we can accomplish and how much fun and community we can build when we work with police.
Hmm. Yeah, and I want to make sure people understand the point you were just making about how this basketball game later today is going to be played. Quite often when we hear about events like this, it'll be the cops against the kids in a sense. I mean, in a friendly sort of way, but we have the police officers forming one team and youth from the city forming the other team playing against each other. And you have very specifically created this so police and youth are on the same team playing together as teammates. You've been doing this for several years. Has it always been done that way, or is this a change that you have kind of made along the way?
No, it was always done that way with that point in mind because when we brought this game to Racine, when we brought this initiative to Racine, there was a uptick in violence in 2022. There was also an officer involved shooting that year, so there was just so much controversy around not just policing but safety, community, gun violence. All of these things were really controversial at that time and so many mixed emotions by so many different groups of community and family. So one thing we wanted to make clear from the very beginning is that it's not us against them. It's all of us. So everything was intentional from the beginning as far as even the name being Bigger Than Basketball. It was a way to draw people out. We know that people wanted to play. We knew that people liked to watch. But it's like, how do we get our message across? How do we make change? How do we bring the community out? And so we use basketball for that. And I can say over the years, I'm really proud that working with the school district, law enforcement, different community members, that the event actually has become bigger than basketball. We have dance teams now, community resources, a lot of city officials come. I saw a lot of people this weekend that are really excited to come, that they can finally make it this year. So it's really intentional. From day one that we need to come together as community, even the team names, Team Unity and Team Peace. So with those community officers, teams, the names always stay the same, Team Unity, Team Peace, and that is because that is the goal of this event and what we want to really bring forth is peace and unity in our community because that's what it takes. It takes all of us. It takes all of us working together. It takes all of us wanting to do better. So no matter who wins the game tonight by points, it's a win for everybody, whether it's Team Unity or Team Peace. It's a win for the racing community.
Nicely said. Although, as you've already alluded to, certainly it has not been a spotless record or a relationship without problems. But on the other hand, there are things that the city of Racine and its police department have certainly done right over the years in terms of trying to foster a more positive connection between the police department and the community we're talking about than has sometimes played out in other cities, for instance, ways in which the Racine police have sought to really be an intrinsic part of the community and not sort of riding above it at a distance. What would you say would be a couple of the most important ways in which there at least have been attempts to foster a positive relationship? Something that, of course, this event we're talking about today can only enhance.
I think that we have six community policing houses in our neighborhood, and I think there have been a lot of officers in those COP units, in those houses, that have been intentional about building relationships, getting to know the neighborhood, getting to know the young people in their neighborhood. I see our officers out at a lot of awareness events. They're out in the schools. I see them sharing information, having different, like, resource tables at events. And I think all of those things matter because it's just an opportunity, whether we see you in uniform or not, it's an opportunity, again, to see you as a person, to see you as doing a job. But it's also a chance for them to interact with community where it's just a hey, hello, maybe taking a picture, maybe giving that young person or even adult swag items. Or maybe that's the chance that the community feels safe talking to them while they're out in a community event. They maybe want to talk about something personal that may be going on, but then that officer can, you know, give the information. And then I see a lot of the times they follow up with that person, you know, and they make sure that that issue did get addressed, or I see them referring them to the proper channels. So I think every opportunity where we see an officer in their squad or not, in uniform or not, is a chance to engage with them as community, but to first see them as people, as community members, as neighbors, and as people who want the same as we do every day, which is to be safe. Everyone wants to make it home safe, regardless of what career or job they clock in and out of every day. We all want to make it home to our family safe, and we want our community to be safe for our families to live.
So very true. Before we let you go, I want to give you an opportunity to spell out exactly what is going to be unfolding at Washington Park High School today, beginning at 5:30, and what people are going to experience if they come out to witness today's bigger than basketball event.
So today I'm very excited to announce and host the fourth Bigger Than Basketball event at Park High School. We are making it personal to Park this year, where you'll see the orange and blue uniforms. We'll have a photo booth. This is a family-friendly event. We will have, most importantly, we will be remembering those who have lost their lives. We will have a angel exhibit where you can see different people who have lost their lives that we'll be making sure they are never forgotten. You'll also see community. There's free food, dance performances, and just a way to come out to be a part of the Racine community, be a part of the change that we all talk about and want to see. This is your chance to show up, to support. And if there's any way that anything you would like to see, we are open for those. We are open for suggestions and input from our community because we want everyone to feel like they belong and that they have a role in making Racine a better place.
Nikita Hamer is Racine County Violent Crime Reduction Coordinator. She is also state lead for Voices of Black Mothers United and the primary organizer of the Bigger Than Basketball event that is going to be taking place at Washington Park High School in Racine beginning at 5:30. Nikita Hamer, thank you so much for all of the good work that you are doing on behalf of this incredibly important cause, and thank you for being my morning show guest today.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. For part two of today's program, we are looking ahead to what promises to be a really fun night of music tomorrow evening at First Presbyterian Church. It is the season finale for the Choral Arts Society of Southeastern Wisconsin, the finale of what I think is their 38th season under the direction of their founder and music director, Jim Schatzman. Jim Schatzman is with us in the studio. He has with us Pat Badger, who is the associate conductor of the group and responsible for bringing in some young artists that we'll be hearing about. who are going to be part of the proceedings. And we're also really happy to have with us one of the biggest names here in southeastern Wisconsin when it comes to jazz, Kurt Hanrahan, well-known jazz musician and jazz music educator. And he is going to be a major participant in tomorrow night's concert. He and his group, Opus, and we're going to be talking about how the worlds of jazz and choral music can be blended in some really intriguing ways. We'll talk about this thing called the Great American Songbook, which is at the heart of the programming of tomorrow night, and we'll talk about a whole lot of other stuff as well, I am sure. Jim Schatzman, Pat Badger, and Kurt Hanrahan, we welcome all three of you to the morning show.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good to have all of you here. So, Jim Schatzman, the choral arts certainly does a whole lot of different things, and you have, for quite some time now, I think, made a name for yourself as someone who programs sometimes outside the box and kind of pushes the boundaries of a group, mm-hmm. of what a group like Choral Arts can do and can accomplish. Tell us what was behind your decision to end your current season with this tribute to the Great American Songbook.
Well, I think the title says it all, Great American Songbook. These are iconic songs that have been a part of our culture, and they just keep coming back. You know, they have their day, and then someone else picks them up. It wasn't too long ago you had artists like Rod Stewart and others doing a Great American Songbook mm-hmm. recordings. It's just amazing how these songs with brilliant compositions by, again, iconic composers, Hokey Carmichael and George Gershwin and others. Those names are just part of our American culture. And then, you know, as a choral person, the smartness of these lyrics is just stunning. You go back to, you sit in an office and you go, this would be a really nice program. You could start rehearsal and you go, wow. Wow, mm-hmm. these harmonies, the subtleties of tone painting and the thing that comes in, these aren't your typical popular music songs. They really have a depth that you can just keep picking away at, and they just keep you get more and more layers of satisfaction mm. out of these songs. And I think when people hear them, they're going to go, oh, yeah, I know that. Oh, I know that too. Oh, wow, yeah, I forgot about that one. These are just... they're just part of our psyche.
Sure. And I did notice that although it looks like the majority of what the Choral Arts is doing would be what we would consider kind of the classic mm-hmm. golden age Great American Songbook, mm-hmm. you've also pushed the limits a little bit in terms of a couple of songs that mm-hmm. are much more recent that probably mm-hmm. don't typically fall under that umbrella, but are great songs nevertheless.
Sure. And, you know, one of the things that I had a conversation with some of your listeners may know, Jack Grassel, and he was saying, you know, there's been there's been a development of the Great American Songbook. It continues to go, and now, you know, we think of songs in the 60s or 70s. Well, that's already 50 years and 60 years away. Mm-hmm. And so what music history professor used to say, you can't really judge music history until about at least 50 to 100 years after it happens. Mm. And we're in that era again where composers like Chick Corea that we're going to talk about in a little bit, are really, again, a part of just a classic body of work that are that just will not go away, continue yeah. to be a part of the jazz scene as well as the as an iconic composer, part of our DNA, our musical
right.
DNA.
Tell us about the decision to invite Mr. Kurt Hanrahan to be a part of the proceedings of tomorrow night's concert.
That's an easy call in a way. Kurt and I have both been around a while, and I went to college with he and his brother and Jim Sodke, who's a member of Opus as well. Mm-hmm. And so we've known each other for a long time, and I've been following Kurt's career through his Milwaukee Jazz Orchestra and projects at UWM, and he's invited mutual friends of ours back from L.A. to perform with his band. It's just been it's really fun to perform with your friends and to be in a position to invite people in that you respect and that you follow their careers for years. Kurt's an amazing saxophonist and an amazing jazz mind, and this is part of the era that we've moved into, more of the more contemporary jazz. It's, I say as somebody talking about music that was written 50 years ago.
Right.
When I was thinking about that, Kurt just came to mind right away.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited to have him here.
Is this the first collaboration in terms of Kurt Hanrahan and the Choral Arts Society?
It's the second time you've played with us, is that correct?
Actually, the third.
Third, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Tell us about the previous occasions.
I think I did the two Beatle concerts that you had.
That's right.
And that's right. We had a small orchestra on that one.
And big crowds.
Yes, very big crowds, right. You know, I have to say, too, that it's great for a jazz musician to work with vocalists, and these artists sound fantastic. When I was younger, I never really listened to lyrics. I was, listening to the melody and harmonies and stuff, but not the lyrics. And all of a sudden, I started listening to Cole Porter's music and started realizing, man, there's a lot of depth here. There's a lot of meat to these lyrics. But Cole Porter really kind of set the stage. Jazz musicians really love playing his music because of how deep his lyrics are. And just a quick example, listen or read or sing the lyrics to I've Got You Under My Skin. It sounds like, it is not that interesting of a title, but when you get into the lyrics, it is really expressive. And you'll hear that on the concert as well. Mm. So I've become a convert, so to speak, to the lyric, and I'm much more aware of it. As a jazz musician, too, the lyric is very important as far as developing your phrasing, understanding where the tune is going, how to build tension and release. It's a very important part of it. And a lot of jazz musicians, like Dexter Gordon, would recite the verse and the chorus to a tune before he played it.
Mm.
And that helped him understand more and more what it was all about.
Right. Well, it just underscores the fact that even when all you're doing is playing a song, it's still a song, and it's still a song that the composer intended to say something. Even if we're not actually hearing the lyrics, in a sense, the lyrics live in the music itself to some degree.
Right.
And it seems sort of short-sighted to play a song and have absolutely no idea what this song originally was in terms of its lyrics. So I appreciate you you sharing that, and it's exciting to have you part of this. Pat Badger, I don't know if people necessarily think of you immediately when they think of Great American Songbook and jazz and so on. I think most people, when they think of you as a musician, remember your many years as the distinguished first trumpet of the Racine Symphony Orchestra. Tell us how much this has been actually a part of your musical life over the years.
Really, jazz was part of my early, early musical life.
Hmm.
When I was in middle school, I was part of the Toppers jazz band, which was six or seven kids. And I think our music teacher put us together. And we were actually coached over a summer by a college student, coached in jazz. And that was just a new world to me.
Uh-huh.
All of us loved it. And we ended up performing for some all-city music event. So even though my world really is, as you said, in kind of classical music, jazz was a stream early on. And I think, being a trumpet player, one of the really cool things about being a trumpet player is that instrument is so prevalent in both worlds. And I was thinking about the way this concert is organized, thinking about a classical concert where you'd have a soloist that might play a Mendelssohn violin concerto. They play once, and that's it.
Right.
And in this concert, the way it's set up, to use the word set, it's like a set list, Kurt's band plays, the choir sings, Kurt's band comes again and plays, choir sings, the band comes again. So the whole format, not only the music, but the format, it's like you're going to a club.
Ah.
The First Presbyterian Club.
There you go. For those of you just joining us, we are talking about what promises to be a really exciting night of music tomorrow evening at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Racine. It is the season finale for the Choral Arts Society of Southeastern Wisconsin, led by Jim Schatzman and their associate conductor, Pat Badger. And jazz legend Kurt Hanrahan is also on hand along with his group Opus. And it will be primarily a celebration of the great American songbook and a wonderful way to bring all of this together. Kurt Hanrahan, unlike Pat, who's really had feet in, you know, kind of both worlds, I suspect as a saxophonist primarily, that you have lived mostly, predominantly in the world of jazz. Is that right?
Yes and no. You know, I grew up with the music in the household, and I hated it at first. My brother brought these albums home from the Army, and I didn't know the music at all. I was just used to listening to the radio. You know, this is back in the early 60s. And I became interested after studying clarinet for a while, and then saxophone, and actually studied more classical clarinet and saxophone, not jazz. So that came later, and I have pretty much an interest in classical saxophone just because it's a very unique genre. But you know, jazz is still my my home life. It lives in our home, and has been, you know, where it's really kind of developed.
Right.
I just remember too. It just came back to memory. Kurt played with us yet another time when we had a small classical ensemble where he played clarinet. And so, you know, I would say, you know, thinking of people like Tim Bell too, he, you know, played, was known as a saxophonist who, you know, played at North Texas, but he also was often a guest saxophonist with the Milwaukee Symphony, and a fine clarinetist. I mean, great. Really fine clarinetist.
Yes. I knew Tim well. We played probably close to 1,000 jobs together from when he first moved into the area.
Wow.
And a wonderful musician.
Yeah. Kurt, I want to give you a chance to talk just for a second about the whole business of educating young musicians in the world of jazz, and that's of course something you've devoted a tremendous amount of time and energy to over the years, a lot of different age levels and so on. Generally speaking, what is the challenge and pleasure of working with young people, and in particular young people who maybe have been rooted in kind of the classical world in terms of getting them comfortable with and excited about the realm of jazz, whatever that means?
Yeah, it's a bit of a, you know, conundrum because you have to teach the instrument well enough so that they can express themselves on it. It takes as much skill to play jazz as it does to play classical music. And so it's important to develop their instrumental skill far enough so that they don't have to think about the instrument when they're playing.
Mm.
And then you bring in the other processes of being able to do some singing, hearing, you know, from the outside in. I always tell them I like them to see this with internal eyes and then internalize the music, to remember that. Because yeah, you have two sources. Classically, a lot of times we focus on reading the music, getting it down from that point of view, and the interpretation is on the page, and we're interpreting somebody else's music. Jazz is about developing your own voice, and so to do that, you have to work at you know, coming from inside out, and that takes a while. It's a long process. You know, a lot of my students have been with me for many, many, many years, and you know, it's a process that is a lot of fun once they break through and they can express themselves. But sometimes it becomes, you know, tough to break through some of the hard parts of playing the instrument or singing or whatever it happens to be. You got to be able to do both.
Right. In order to hear a little music, we're going to sample in a moment part of a piece of yours, which features the Milwaukee Jazz Orchestra, which is one of the groups with which you are active right now and have been for a while. Tell us about the Milwaukee Jazz Orchestra and then about this piece that we're going to hear a little of, which is called Imp.
It was born out of a concert program that I started putting together at UWM in the early 2000s. I wanted to honor a great big band leader, Woody Herman, who's from Milwaukee. Mm. And we decided to do a festival, a jazz festival, bringing in a guest soloist. Back then it actually was. We used just people that had played with Woody, and were now out in the world playing jazz on their own. Woody was a great, very benevolent big band leader. Hmm. And so they would come in and solo with our group, and the big band that I hired, the local musicians, were really into it, and it was a very high-level group. So my brother and I, once I retired, said, well, I'm going to keep this going. And so we turned it into a nonprofit, which is an oxymoron in jazz terms. Then started writing for the band and playing in the area and creating a festival. And we've got one coming up in May 11th. This is at the Skylight Theater. Mm. We're looking to start doing a subscription series, one in the spring and one in the fall, and hopefully that will be our signature series.
Okay. Well, Skylight's a beautiful place to perform, that's for sure. And so here's a little bit of a piece of yours called Imp, which features the Milwaukee Jazz Orchestra. This is from a CD called Welcome to Swingsville. Gosh, I hate to pot that down. That is such wonderful music and such wonderful playing by Kurt Hanrahan and the Milwaukee Jazz Orchestra in a piece of his called Imp. Kurt Hanrahan is going to be on hand with his group Opus tomorrow night, along with the Choral Arts Society of Southeastern Wisconsin, led by their founder and music director, Jim Schatzman, and Pat Badger, their associate conductor. And Pat Badger, I understand you are bringing in some young artists who are going to expand on the evening with some pre-concert and post-concert fun. Tell us about these young people and what they're going to be doing.
I guess, certainly this season, in every concert that Choral Arts has had, we've begun having guest young artists. And sometimes there are artists that play instruments. Sometimes there's artists, if we have narrators, that do some of the speaking. And Well, young people get a chance to be in their high school ensembles and solo. It's rare that they get to be on a concert with a sort of semi, not really professional, but with a high quality community chorus,
yeah,
which informs them, I think, that you can make music for the rest of your life.
Sure.
So we're bringing in one of the Prairie School's jazz combos, Claire Holly on trumpet, Jack Brevik on tenor sax, Miles York on keyboards, Billy Smith on bass, and Jack Grindy on drums. They're coached by Jamie Brevik. And I have to say, Kurt, this group is a good example of how when we teach, it happens over time. Kurt has a student actually in this group. And I remember when I was full-time at Prairie, many of my top woodwind students were students of Kurt's. So, you know, it's kind of one generation inspires and mentors the next.
That's the best, isn't it?
But on this particular concert, I was also thinking, Kurt, of something that you said about reciting the tune before you play it, because these guest young artists will speak pre-concert about what got them into jazz, what inspires them, and then post-concert, they will play the tune because they're the house band for the reception after the concert.
Ah, fantastic. I see that the pre-concert event is titled here, Speaking of Jazz, and but you're meaning that quite literally, which is a really, really wonderful idea. So then, yes, this jazz combo from Prairie School will be offering up the Speaking of Jazz moment, 5:45 to 6:30, and then playing at the post-concert reception. And in between, all kinds of marvelous music making. Jim Schatzman, I should think that one of the hardest parts is, where do you start, where do you stop in terms of putting a concert together when you have as rich a well as the Great American Songbook to draw from?
Yeah, we've had this conversation before. When we talked about the Beatles, it was the same thing. Where do you stop? I mean, my initial list was probably about 50 songs that just off the top of my head without even having to do any research. And then you kind of, well, you build it by trying to, as Pat said earlier, trying to create some sets that are interesting and that are a good cross-section. And so, you know, the Great American Songbook contains jazz, but it contains musical theater as well. So we have some of those as well, featuring, of course, the inimitable team of Rodgers and Hammerstein. And so, you know, this will be a program that will really interest young people to introduce them to music. Some of them may not know very well, but not only the standing that they have that standing because the quality of these songs is so remarkable.
Mm.
But if you're my age or older, you're going to remember these songs. Mm. I remember telling my dad I would listen to the Beatles and the Monkees, all these popular groups from the day, which would drive him nuts. But he also had a wonderful collection, a Reader's Digest collection of Great American Songbook. And I never let him know until I was older that I would play that when he left the house.
And I remembered those.
I remembered those tunes, and they meant something to me.
Yeah. So great, great music will be part of tomorrow night's concert, including a tribute to the great Chick Corea by Kurt Hanrahan and his group Opus. The concert begins at 7 o'clock. It's at First Presbyterian Church. And you can go to Choral Arts Online for their website. Will tickets be available at the door as well?
They will be.
Very good. Jim Schatzman, Pat Badger, Kurt Hanrahan, it's been great to talk with all of you about tomorrow night's concert. Best wishes to you and all of the musicians involved.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks.
Monday on the morning show, my conversation with Ronald Gruner, the author of a fascinating book called COVID Wars, America's Struggle Over Public Health and Personal Freedom. He examines some of the ways in which our country became even more painfully divided during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic and the ways in which that hampered our response to this crisis. Looking ahead on Tuesday's morning show, it's the monthly visit of Dr. Art Sear. And on Wednesday, another member of the Carthage faculty, Dr. Ron Gronovich, who is chair of the economy department, will be looking at President Trump's policy on tariffs and its ramifications for our country's economy and the world's economy as well. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. Today is going to be sunny and seasonal with a high of 53 degrees inland, a little cooler near the lake. Clear skies and cold overnight with a low of 33. Tomorrow, Saturday, sunny, and we warm to a high of 61 degrees. Even warmer on Sunday, a high of 66 degrees, but with mostly cloudy skies and a slight chance of rain. Clouds will persist on Monday with highs remaining in the 60s. Not quite as warm on Tuesday and Wednesday, but sunshine will return. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.